Today is Wednesday, December 31st, 2025, and you're listening to the World Socialist Website. The year of mass layoffs. Prepare a global working class counteroffensive in 2026 by Jerry White. 2025 will go down as one of the most devastating years of mass layoffs in recent history. More than 1 million jobs were eliminated in the United States alone, making it one of the largest waves of job destructions of the 21st century, and the largest to take place without an officially declared recession or financial crash. The ruling class has used the year to carry out deliberate restructuring of production, accelerating automation, artificial intelligence, and global reorganization to slash labor costs and vastly enrich a tiny financial oligarchy. According to the job outplacement firm Challenger, Gray, and Christmas, employers announced more than 1.1 million job cuts through November 2025, a 54% increase from the same period last year. This was the highest total since the beginning of the pandemic in 2020, and only the sixth time since 1993 that job cuts exceeded 1.1 million during the first 11 months of a year. These figures understate the real scale of devastation, excluding many temporary layoffs, contract non-renewals, and unreported firings. The destruction of jobs extends across every major sector of the economy. Logistics and transportation were hit particularly hard. UPS announced the elimination of 48,000 jobs in 2025 as part of a sweeping restructuring that closed facilities, automated operations, and intensified exploitation for those who remained. Tech giants, long promoted as engines of innovation, led all industries in layoffs, with more than 153,000 job cuts announced through November, up 17% from the same point in 2024. AI and automation were used to implement thousands of layoffs at Microsoft, 15,000, Intel, another 15,000, Amazon, 14,000, Verizon, 13,000, and HP, 4,000 to 6,000, and other corporations, while funneling billions into stock buybacks and executive compensation. The entertainment and media industry recorded another brutal year, with over 17,000 job cuts across television, film, broadcast, news, and streaming in the first 11 months of the year, up 18% from last year. In food processing, consumer products, and retail, Nestle announced 16,000 job cuts. Tyson is closing a beef packing plant in Nebraska, cutting 3,200 jobs. And Procter & Gamble is cutting 7,000 jobs, and Target, 1,800, while maintaining profitability and rewarding shareholders. In the auto industry, 2025 exposed the fraud of the so-called electric vehicle transition under capitalism. General Motors implemented deep job cuts across its EV and battery operations, including more than 1,200 permanent layoffs at its flagship Factory Zero assembly plant in Detroit, as production was slashed from two shifts to one. Hundreds more were laid off or placed on indefinite furlough at Ultium Cells battery plants in Ohio and Tennessee. Ford is ending production of its F-150 Lightning EV pickup, scrapping its Blue Oval battery joint venture in Kentucky at the cost of 1,600 jobs. Job cuts are accelerating in construction equipment and truck manufacturing, with the Case 1H plant set to close in Burlington, Iowa, and 100 jobs lost at the Volvo Mack drivetrain facility in Hagerstown, Maryland. Despite the official GDP numbers hailed by Trump, economists say that nearly half of the states in the U.S. have already seen levels of job losses and declining output consistent with a recession. Oregon, for example, reported nearly 9,000 mass layoffs in 2025, a figure that surpassed the pace of job losses during the worst years of the Great Recession of 2008 to 2009. The jobs massacre is not limited to the U.S. Across Europe, industrial layoffs accelerated, with German manufacturers announcing job cuts at a pace of roughly 10,000 per month. In the auto sector, VW, Bosch, ZF, and other manufacturers slashed more than 50,000 jobs, while Ford is cutting 1,000 jobs at its Cologne EV plant in Germany as part of its plans to eliminate 4,000 jobs across Europe by 2027. Major corporations are also carrying out sweeping restructuring plans in Britain, France, and Italy. The working class is being told that this devastation is inevitable, the result of market forces, technological change, or global competition. In reality, it is the conscious policy of corporations and capitalist governments confronting deepening economic contradictions. Artificial intelligence and automation, technologies which, under a rationally organized society, could radically reduce the work week and eliminate hazardous repetitive tasks, are being weaponized to destroy jobs and intensify exploitation. Warnings of an even greater wave of job cuts in 2026 are explicit. Studies indicate that AI can already replace work equivalent to more than 10% of the U.S. workforce, and leading figures within the tech industry openly predict that millions more jobs will be eliminated as companies pursue AI savings. Business journals now speak candidly of a future of jobless growth, in which productivity and profits soar, while employment stagnates or declines. This assault is inseparable from the broader crisis of capitalism, the driving out of living labor, the sole source of surplus value, from the production process only deepens the system's contradictions. Corporations seek to offset this through speed-up, mass layoffs, trade war policies, and the intensified exploitation of those who remain employed. The turn toward economic nationalism and militarism, including the escalation of conflict with China, is bound up with the same crisis and the same effort to impose its cost on the working class. The grotesque social outcome is a society in which mass unemployment and insecurity coexist with obscene wealth accumulation. Wall Street expects stock markets to continue their meteoric rise in 2026, even as millions lose their livelihoods. The personal fortune of Elon Musk surged to roughly $750 billion in 2025, symbolizing the vast transfer of wealth upward that accompanies mass layoffs and austerity. The trade union bureaucracies have functioned throughout this process as instruments of corporate management. They accept the supposed right of corporations to eliminate jobs, limit their response to obtaining severance packages and early retirement schemes, and actively suppress any struggle by workers to defend their livelihoods. Worst of all, the heads of the United Auto Workers and Teamsters promote nationalist poison, aligning themselves with the Trump administration's trade war policies and blaming workers in other countries and immigrant workers for layoffs imposed by transnational corporations. Yet 2025 was also marked by a renewed growth of class struggle. In the U.S., Boeing workers carried out a four-month strike, demonstrating deep anger and militancy despite efforts by the union apparatus to isolate and contain the struggle. Across Europe, general strikes erupted in Belgium, Italy, and Portugal against austerity and attacks on social rights. In Latin America and other regions, mass protests and strikes underscored the global character of working-class resistance. These struggles will intensify in 2026. Dozens of major contracts are set to expire in the United States alone, including agreements covering 30,000 oil refinery and petrochemical workers at the end of January, thousands of auto part workers at Dana, NexTier, and other suppliers, and large sections of healthcare, education, and logistic workers. Corporations are preparing to use these negotiations to impose job cuts, automation, and concessions. The decisive question is leadership and perspective. In 2025, the International Workers Alliance of Rank and File Committees advanced a fundamentally different strategy. It worked to build independent organizations of workers outside and against the control of the union bureaucracies, linking struggles across industries and national borders, and connecting the fight for jobs and safety to a broader political struggle against capitalism, dictatorship, and war. In the United States, rank-and-file committees helped spearhead worker-led investigations into deaths on the job, exposing the reality that many so-called accidents are in fact social murder. The public inquiry into the killing of Stellantis worker Ronald Adams Sr. at the Dundee Engine Complex broke through management and UAW cover-ups, establishing the principle that workers themselves must control investigations into unsafe conditions. At the U.S. Postal Service, the IWARFC has initiated a rank-and-file investigation into the deaths of postal workers Nick Acker and Russell Scruggs Jr., opposing management cover-up and the complicity of union officials who sought to bury the truth. Internationally, the IWARFC intervened against union-backed restructuring in the German auto industry, opposing plant closures and concession schemes at Ford, Mercedes, and other manufacturers. It supported rank-and-file struggles against the Amazonification of public services, including at postal operations in Canada and the UK, and aided workers in Turkey, education, and healthcare in building independent committees to oppose austerity and speed up. The defense of jobs, safety, and living standards requires new forms of organization, democratic, militant, and international in scope, and economic struggles cannot be separated from the fight for political power by the working class. Workers must assert their basic social rights, including the right to a secure, well-paid job. Job cuts must be opposed with the demand for a shorter work week with no loss of pay, so that technological advances benefit society as a whole. Workers displaced by automation must receive guaranteed income, healthcare, and pensions. This struggle must advance towards workers' control over production and safety, enforced through rank-and-file committees, with the power to halt production to protect workers' lives. Ultimately, it requires the expropriation of the banks and major corporations, transforming them into publicly owned utilities, democratically controlled by the working class, and the conversion of military production into socially useful labor. Central to this fight is the conscious appropriation of technology by the working class itself. Socialism AI represents an important initiative in this regard, enabling workers to turn the very technologies used by corporations to destroy jobs into tools for political education, organization, and global coordination. Rather than allowing artificial intelligence to remain an instrument of exploitation, workers must seize it as a weapon in the struggle for socialist consciousness and international unity. Rank-and-file committees must be built now, linking workers across plants, industries, and borders. Looming contract fights must be united into a common struggle against layoffs, automation, and austerity. Above all, workers must take up a socialist political perspective, breaking with all factions of the capitalist class, and fighting for their own independent interest. 2025 laid bare the logic of capitalism with brutal clarity. 2026 will determine whether the working class responds with organization, international unity, and conscious struggle, or whether the ruling class succeeds in imposing a new era of mass unemployment and social reaction. Trump launches aerial strike on Venezuela amid Democratic Party silence. By Andre Damon. CNN confirmed Tuesday that the Central Intelligence Agency conducted a drone strike on Venezuelan territory on December 24th, corroborating a statement that U.S. President Donald Trump first made last week. The attack is a criminal escalation of the undeclared war the United States is waging against Venezuela, a war of aggression that includes the imposition of an effective blockade and a series of killings on international waters off Venezuela's coast that have left at least 107 people dead in 30 strikes since September. The Christmas Eve strike, which took place on a port facility, is the first aerial attack inside Venezuela since the U.S. military buildup in the region began in August. The United States has amassed the largest military force in the Caribbean since the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis. According to U.S. Southern Command, approximately 15,000 military personnel are now operating in the region. The Armada includes more than a dozen large warships, led by the USS Gerald R. Ford, the world's largest aircraft carrier, and two amphibious assault ships carrying thousands of Marines. The American people overwhelmingly oppose a U.S. war in Venezuela. A CBS News YouGov poll found 70% oppose U.S. military action, with just 30% in favor. Trump is seeking to escalate this conflict over the Christmas and New Year holiday, hoping the population will not notice. He is abetted by the U.S. media and a political establishment united behind the drive to reassert American hegemony in Latin America. The fact that the United States has launched an airstrike on a sovereign nation, an act of war under international law, has prompted no serious discussion in the political establishment or the corporate media. The attack was relegated to small headlines on newspaper front pages and did not even appear on the Washington Post front page on Tuesday evening. Trump first revealed the strike during a radio interview on December 26th, telling a billionaire Republican donor who hosts a New York radio show that the U.S. had destroyed, quote, a big plant or facility where ships come from, end quote. CIA officials told the U.S. media that the strike was intended to send a message to Maduro that the United States is capable of assassinating him. Trump's decision to publicly reveal the strike sends a serious message to Maduro that, quote, the U.S. can reach down and touch him when it chooses to, end quote, according to Rick De La Torre, a former CIA Latin American station chief speaking to USA Today. Elliot Abrams, the first Trump administration special envoy for Venezuela, explained the Trump administration's efforts at regime change in Venezuela. Quote, the economy of Venezuela will get worse, and the finances of the Maduro regime will get worse, and that will increase public pressure and internal pressure in the regime, that at some point there are either mass demonstrations or somebody in the military acts to overthrow the government, end quote. The drone strike takes place alongside an escalating campaign of piracy on the high seas. The United States has seized multiple oil tankers transporting Venezuelan crude, imposing what amounts to an effective blockade of the country's primary source of revenue. One tanker seized earlier this month, the Centuries, was carrying Venezuelan crude oil purchased by a Chinese trading company. Another tanker, the Bella One, has been fleeing U.S. Coast Guard pursuit since December 21st. As the vessel fled, the crew painted a Russian flag on the side in an apparent attempt to claim Russian protection. The fact that Russia and China are being drawn into the U.S. assault on Venezuela demonstrate that it is not merely a regional operation, but part of a broader global confrontation. This escalation comes as the United States and European powers are provoking war all over the world. European powers are openly discussing sending troops to Ukraine. the war now being initiated against Venezuela, has the potential to escalate far beyond Latin America. Trump's targeting of Latin America is aimed at providing a power base for war all over the world. The administration's national security strategy explicitly calls for, quote, restoring American preeminence in the Western Hemisphere, and denying China the ability to own or control strategically vital assets in our hemisphere, end quote. The document effectively asserts U.S. ownership over two continents, presented as our hemisphere, whose resources Washington intends to seize as a staging ground for confrontation with Russia and China. Despite Trump's claim that the war on Venezuela is being waged to stop drug trafficking, Venezuela is not a major producer of narcotics. The drug war pretext is a transparent fraud covering the real aim: the overthrow of the Venezuelan government and the seizure of the country's vast oil reserves. Trump has made no secret of his intention to pursue regime change in Venezuela, declaring that Maduro's, quote, days are numbered. The Democratic Party has offered no meaningful opposition to Trump's actions. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said only that, quote, Trump needs to be straight with the American people and explain what his strategy is, end quote. But Schumer, alongside other Democratic leaders, has made clear his desire to see Maduro removed from power. Asked earlier this month whether he opposes regime change in Venezuela, Schumer replied, you know, obviously, if Maduro would just flee on his own, everyone would like that, end quote. Senator Mark Warner of Virginia, the ranking Democrat on the Senate Intelligence Committee, appeared on ABC's This Week on Sunday when host Martha Raddatz asked Warner, do you agree with Trump's effort to oust the dictator Maduro? Warner replied, I agree that the Venezuelan people want Maduro gone, end quote. The Democratic leadership broadly supports the escalation against Venezuela, even as it criticizes Trump for not being sufficiently aggressive against Russia and China. The so-called progressive wing of the Democratic Party has been equally silent. Neither Senator Bernie Sanders nor Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has issued any statement on Venezuela since Trump announced the strikes. There have been no calls for congressional hearings, no demands for an investigation into the legality of the attacks, no legislation to halt the military escalation. The Democrats ended the year by joining with Republicans to pass the $901 billion National Defense Authorization Act, funding the very military apparatus now being used to wage war on Venezuela. The year 2025 was a year of war, of U.S.-backed genocide in Gaza, of U.S.-NATO escalation in Ukraine, of American military buildup across the globe. Trump's drone strike on Venezuela makes clear that the United States intends to wage war all over the world in the new year. Australian union leaders support anti-protest laws after Bondi shooting, by Martin Scott. In the wake of the December 14th Bondi Beach terror attack, prominent union leaders were quick to declare their full-throated support for moves by the New South Wales, or the NSW, and Victorian Labour governments to introduce harsh new anti-protest laws. The NSW legislation was passed in the early hours of December 24th, after Labour Premier Chris Minns recalled Parliament specifically to ram through the bill. The laws grant sweeping emergency powers to the state's police minister and police chief to prohibit all public assemblies across the entire state once they declare that a terrorist event has occurred. An initial blanket ban can last 14 days and may be repeatedly extended for up to 90 days in total, during which courts are barred from authorizing demonstrations. These bans empower police to forcibly disperse gatherings and carry out mass arrests. For more than 2 years, Australia's union bureaucracies have ensured that mass opposition among workers and young people to Israel's genocide of the Palestinians in Gaza has not been allowed to find expression in strikes to block the supply of weapon components or other war-related goods to the Zionist regime of Benjamin Netanyahu. But the support for police state measures designed to suppress all forms of protest expressed by Health Services Union, HSU National President Gerard Hayes, and Victorian Trades Hall Council, the VTHC Secretary Luke Hilakari, marks a qualitative shift to the right by the union apparatus. Speaking to The Australian, the right-wing Murdoch-owned outlet that has led witch hunts against Palestine supporters over the past 2 years, the two senior union officials signaled their agreement with the slanderous equation of opposition to Israel's genocide with anti-Semitism. Hayes denounced pro-Palestinian demonstrators, quote, "Have some effing decency, quite frankly. Seriously, there are 15 people who have been killed. There are 40 people who have been put in a hospital. It's obscene to continue to protest at this point in time," end quote. This is an explicit endorsement of the fraudulent claim that the hundreds of thousands of workers and young people who have protested against the genocide are somehow responsible for the mass shooting at Bondi, and that these protests must therefore be shut down. In fact, there is no indication that the Islamic State-inspired perpetrators of the terror attack had any connection whatsoever with the protest movement. But their reactionary and anti-Semitic mass murder is being used, with Labour government playing the lead role, to justify long-standing plans to shut down protest and criminalize dissent more broadly. Hilakari said pro-Palestine protesters had, quote, "made all the points they need to make about Gaza, and they just need to back off," end quote. This is an outrageous statement designed to promote the fraud that the official ceasefire renders opposition to the genocide obsolete. The reality is that Israel continues to murder and starve the population of Gaza and is openly preparing to broaden its imperialist-backed assault on the Middle East. Referring to a banner used by pseudo-left group Unionist for Palestine, declaring that Intifada is union business, Hilakari said, "I would not stand near it. I don't think that it's union business because I don't think that photo, that sign, is bringing people together," end quote. Hilakari's opposition to the word Intifada, an Arabic term for shaking off oppression, is a tacit endorsement of threats, most prominently by Mins, to specifically outlaw the slogan, "Globalize the Intifada." Hayes openly declared his support for this blatant attack on free speech, according to The Australian. In other words, these two high-ranking union officials have declared their alignment with the state and federal labor government, the Zionist lobby, and the corporate media, against workers who want to fight oppression. There could hardly be a clearer illustration of the class role played by the union bureaucracy. Hayes, a prominent figure in NSW's labor right faction, whose backing was central to Min's elevation to lead the party, has railed against pro-Palestinian demonstrations in which health workers, including those covered by HSU, have been significant participants since the genocide began. In December 2023, when HSU members emailed Hayes to ask if they could take union banners and flags to the weekly protests against the genocide, the union leader did not just refuse. He went to the Murdoch press to publicly attack the workers he claims to represent for daring to make the request. In May 2024, Hayes held a behind-closed-doors meeting with Amir Maimon, in which he later claimed to tell the Israeli ambassador that, quote, "Israel should be more focused on preventing civilian casualties," end quote, at a time when more than 35,000 Gazans had already been killed, according to official estimates. When news of this meeting leaked out and HSU members organized a protest, Hayes denounced their opposition to his meeting in secret with a representative of a genocidal regime as absurd and hard to fathom. Hilakari's turn against protesters is more striking, as he has been a featured speaker at numerous pro-Palestine demonstrations over the past 2 years, including as recently as late August. Like the other union leaders who have occasionally postured as opponents of the genocide at these rallies, his contributions have never amounted to more than empty platitudes. The real role of Hilakari, the VTHC, and the entire Australian union apparatus has been to block strikes and suppress the opposition of workers to Israel's war crimes and the complicity of the state and federal labor governments. Now, Hilakari is attempting to seize upon the Bondi terror attack as a pretext to lobby for the total shutdown of protest against the genocide. While other bureaucrats have not matched the bluntness of the HSU and the VTHC leader's support for police state measures, not a single union has opposed the legislation. Notably, no union official spoke at the rallies held in Sydney and Melbourne on December 21st against the laws. What stands exposed is not only the unions, but the pseudo-left organizations that have, throughout the past 2 years, provided political cover for their complicity in Israel's genocide. The role of Unionist for Palestine, led in Sydney by Solidarity and in Melbourne by Socialist Alternative, is to trap workers behind endless appeals to union officials to sanction industrial action or even union participation in protest against the genocide. This was always a fraud, as was exposed at the November 2023 Unionist for Palestine meeting at the Maritime Union of Australia, the MUA Sydney headquarters. A member of the Socialist Equality Party, the SEP, asked MUA branch secretary Paul Keating if the union would act on an urgent call by the Palestinian trade unions for industrial action to paralyze the imperialist Zionist war machine. Keating reacted with unconcealed fury, and the crowd of Solidarity members shouted down and denounced the SEP member for daring to ask the question. More than 2 years on, however, the MUA has not taken a single strike against ZIM or any other cargo associated with Israel. Despite all this, the pseudo-left continued to defend the union bureaucracy, fulfilling their role in a de facto chain of command. Labor governments fund and politically support Israel's genocide. The unions prevent workers from striking, and the pseudo-left use their left populist and occasionally socialist rhetoric to funnel opposition to this conspiracy back behind moral appeals to its perpetrators. These organizations do not represent the working class, but an affluent layer of the upper middle class, and aspire to integrate themselves ever more deeply into the union apparatus and the political establishment. The significance of the union's increasingly open anti-protest stance runs far deeper than the question of Palestine. What they are lining up with is a massive attack on the democratic rights of the entire working class that will enable governments to shut down protest on any issue, virtually at will. Fundamentally, these are wartime measures. As the crisis-ridden capitalist system descends towards global conflict, ruling classes around the world are adopting increasingly authoritarian forms of rule, aimed at stamping out mounting opposition from workers and youth to the prospect of world war and the brutal austerity that will be leveled at the working class to pay for it. The comments of Hayes and Hilakari are not an aberration, but the logical extension of the role played by the unions for decades as an industrial police force, diametrically opposed to the interest of the working class. A key component of this has been the union bureaucrats co-drafting with successive labor governments an enforcement of Australia's draconian anti-strike laws, which outlaw almost all industrial action. The lesson is clear. To defend the right to protest and democratic rights more broadly, workers need to take matters into their own hands. Rank-and-file committees must be fought for and built in every workplace, independent of and in opposition to the union bureaucracies. What is required is not just an industrial fight, but a political one, directed against the capitalist system and all of its organs, including labor and the unions, as well as their pseudo-left defenders. You can find all this and more at the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been Archie Stone for the World Socialist website.